Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:58 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is October 31st. And of course, this being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And this really has been an eventful week. This was a week in which we saw some incredible upward dynamics right across an entire range of stock markets. Everything from Wall Street being up in excess of 11% on one of these days. That means that for the Dow, we've had two of the largest moves in history in the space of 2 weeks on the upside. That is unprecedented because while we have certainly had larger moves before, not to my knowledge have we had two such large moves in such close proximity and from around the same level. That in itself is noteworthy. There is also the short, probably this week has seen one of the largest short covering rallies in history, where we saw Porsche manipulate the market to an extent in Volkswagen shares that they rallied to almost, I think it was €900 a share from approximately 200 in the space of 48 hours. Again, this was an incredible move, quite unprecedented, at least to my knowledge in the past, and it is another wake-up call for those who have been leveraged and short in this market. What we continue to see is that volatility remains quite high, but volatility is also starting to retract. Today, we also saw that while the TED spread and OIS spreads, and for the uninitiated, those are spreads that are looked at for the difference between short-term government debt and short-term interbank debt, that are the difference between the government markets and the credit markets. And those spreads have, which had been at historic highs, up around 4% for the TED spread, have contracted further this week towards the end of the week, while they had been steady earlier on in the week. So that is also very positive, because obviously this has been labeled the credit crisis, and the focus of the problems in this market are in the credit markets, and we will not see a firm resolution to the outstanding problems until the credit markets are fixed. That's going to take time, and I wouldn't like to say just how much time. All we know is that it is not a short-term solution. It is going to be something that will be worked through by the most affected markets out there. This has also been a week in which we saw gold rally rather significantly. It tested the $750 level intra-week, but has pulled back to about $724. So rallied well from the lows around 680. Gold has been a remarkable relative performer and has been an outperformer in a number of currencies other than the dollar. But it has pulled back significantly from its most recent high, whether you want to look at that as in the lower highs versus the dollar or the new highs that it posted versus currencies such as the Australian dollar. It has pulled back. It is against the dollar. It failed at $900, which was the moving average. And this is, by definition, a downtrend, and it does not look as if it has ended just yet, although this does look, it did look at 680 that it had found some support in the short term. It really does need to sustain a move back above its moving average to offset potential for this range in consolidation with potential further downside to continue in the gold markets. And this was also an extremely eventful week in the currency markets because the yen topped out versus just about every currency this week. It is a little bit oversold because of the extent to which it has fallen this week, so there is still room for it to appreciate in the short term, but it would need to go up an awful lot to take out the highs that we've seen it post against a number of currencies, and of course versus a number particularly of the currencies that had benefited most from the carry trade, it had accelerated upwards over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and that does appear to be on its last legs. So that is also an extremely important move. We also see that the government bond markets continue to weaken. The 30-year and the 10-year treasuries are priced almost exactly the same today. They're both at 113.03 for the 10-year, 04 for the 30-year, and they're pulling back significantly from the highs that they posted back in September. They fell a lot, then rallied right back up, didn't quite test those highs, and are pulling back once more. So we're seeing government bond yields starting to push upwards once more. So let's wrap some of this together. You've got the yen hitting at least a short-term peak, potentially medium-term peak. You've got government bond prices coming off. You've got gold rallying somewhat, but looking that bit weaker. Those have been three of the main beneficiaries of the liquidation of carry trades and risk assets and the general deleveraging process that has gone on over the last few months. And certainly, that is extremely interesting in and of itself. But when you couple that together with the fact that not only did you see Wall Street going up 11%, but you saw one day the DAX went up, I think it was 13%, and then the day after you saw pretty much the rest of Europe going up around 9 to 10% as well. So we're starting to see these upper dynamics starting to come through. And then you also look at just how oversold this market is relative to its moving average. It's a very simple indicator to look at. We know from just looking at a statistical bell curve, the farther away from the mean you get, the more likely you are to return to the mean. And we know that these markets are at historically overextended levels, or at least were at extraordinarily overextended levels in mid-October, and haven't rallied particularly significantly from those lows. So that also tells us that there is potential for at least a short to medium term rally to retrace that oversold condition that we see in these markets. Question is, do we see evidence that it is happening right now? This week, we've seen, I think I saw a headline earlier on saying that the S&P had rallied more this week than at any time since 1974. But considering the extent of that rally, it is now coming back into some interesting territory, 1,000 on the Dow, and it's starting to look at 10,000, sorry, 1,000 on the S&P and 10,000 on the Dow. So this is where questions need to be asked as to how far this market is going to go without pulling back somewhat. And this is going to be an interesting week coming up. What we've also seen is that the dollar is not as clear-cut as the yen, because there is major questions over the UK, Swiss, European economies, and there is a lot of potential for interest rate differentials, even though this week we saw interest rates getting cut in the US, in China, in Japan, and as far as I know, a couple of other countries. And there is a strong likelihood that we're going to get rate cuts coming through very quickly in the Eurozone and the UK. There is further potential for that interest rate differential with the dollar to contract relative to the pound and the euro and the Swiss franc. And that is helping to support the dollar in the short term. There is a dichotomy between the way the dollar is performing relative to some of those currencies and how it's performing relative to a lot of those emerging currencies. For example, the Brazilian real, the Mexican peso, the Ukrainian hryvnia, I think it's pronounced, and a whole range of other emerging market currencies, the dollar looks to have quite emphatically topped out this week in line with the yen. Now, that is also important because one thing that we saw over the last few months has been that the extreme decline in emerging markets has coincided with the remarkable strength of the dollar and the yen, and that has been an enormous headwind for so many of these emerging markets as the capitulation trade has gone into overdrive over the last couple of weeks, with people heading for the doors in vast numbers. And that headwind could potentially now be turning into a tailwind. And when we look at so many, particularly of these Asian markets, for example, Taiwan has been trading in an extremely large trading range for much of the last 15 years, and it's testing the lower side of that range now. I don't think it's too much of a leap to anticipate that over the next year, 18 months, 2 years, we could see Taiwan rallying back up to the upper side of that range, which is an incredible percentage gain for that market. Of course, there are still a lot of problems out there, and the problems in the credit markets are going to take years to sort out. There are more than likely going to be the threat of more bankruptcies. The question is whether we really think that governments are going to let any more banks go. They will potentially leave some other companies go bankrupt, but the chances of them leaving the financials go the way of the dodo, I think, is extremely unlikely. There is also some cherry picking to be done in the financial sector. I had lunch with, or I had breakfast really, with a subscriber this morning. We were talking about yields in financials and the fact that in the UK, when they took equity stakes in the banks, there was a call for the banks to cut their dividends to zero, and the pension funds kicked up a ruckus. So yes, dividends will be cut, but it's unlikely that they will be cut to zero, and they will try to re-establish their dividends as fast as they can. Obviously, some financials are in much worse shape than others, and that is a judgment call on behalf of investors to decide which of the banks that have come through the worst of this credit crisis are going to perform on the new upleg. It would be unlikely that all banks are going to perform in line with their sector. It's frankly impossible. But there will certainly be winners and losers, and in the next bull cycle, whenever that begins, there will certainly be a number of banks that are in existence today which will be leading on the upside, and they're likely to be the ones that have come through this credit crisis in the best economic circumstances, and they are ones with the strongest balance sheets. They shouldn't be too difficult to find. Looking at the longer term, because what we are looking at the moment is something like Back to the Future. We have valuations. Well, let's not talk about valuations for the moment. Let's talk about simply prices. Prices for the vast majority of stock markets have come back to 2002, 2003 levels. A lot has happened in the last 5 years, and not all of it has been in relation to the credit crisis. There has been a lot of infrastructure built, and there has been genuine growth, particularly in some of these emerging economies. There's been real value put in, but those country indices are back to levels not seen since 2002 and 2003. We can anticipate quite a lot of further volatility, and there is considerable worry out there as to the health of the Chinese economy and whether they are going to be able to steer their economy through the credit crisis without having a sharp downturn. I mean, I've been to China on a number of occasions, and frankly, you can't believe a word that the communists tell you. The communism starts with a C, and it's corruption another C word, is endemic in a communist system. Governance is everything, and certainly we have been willing to lay aside the corruption issues because they have performed so remarkably well on other issues. But it does leave a open question over that their ability to manage an economy when there is question marks about global growth. So I am not one to entirely dismiss those arguments that could say that China will deteriorate extremely quickly. But the honest answer is I simply don't know. What is an absolute positive is that China has got over $1 trillion in reserve, and there is no country in the world that is in a better shape in terms of its balance sheet in how it can prime their economy to get through the worst of this credit crisis. So I am still willing to give the Chinese economy the benefit of the doubt, even though I personally have reservations about the communist apparatchiks themselves. I think I should also mention that I think that the Chinese Central Bank has done a stellar job of steering their way through this credit crisis so far. They seem to have learned all the lessons that we wish our central bankers would have learned 3 or 4 years ago. They recapitalized their banks back in 2005, which sparked the remarkable bull market in Chinese equities. And they started to tighten it off when it became frothsome. That the casualty, of course, has been that the stock market in China has been in a bear market for much of the last year and has given up a sizable proportion of its gains. But that is also a market that is coming back towards interesting levels. And while there is no evidence yet that it is absolutely bottomed, it is certainly coming back into a level where we can expect the people in charge to start supporting it once more and leaving liquidity back into the system, supporting the property market in the process. We know for a fact that China will certainly not stop in its infrastructure projects. They are well funded and they don't have a problem with money for that. So they will continue to build their infrastructure and they will continue to move their industry up the value scale. And that will also have the corollary of moving some of the low-cost industries away from Guangdong and Shenzhen and into the welcoming arms of low-cost countries, which are also very keen to get as much of that investment into their countries as they can. So that could be a net positive for countries like Vietnam or India, and indeed some of the economies in Africa. Of course, Africa is so far behind so many other countries that it is left off the map, and the capital markets there are so remarkably small that it is a dangerous place to invest. But it is also one of those places where we can expect GDP growth to be astronomical as investment starts to flow in there once more following the credit crisis and following the fact that China is basically kicking out the high pollution, low-end producers from their market and attempting to move up the value chain and stimulate their domestic economy. I personally believe that they will be successful in that regard. The one thing that you could be guaranteed is that the communists' main objective is to look after power for themselves, and if developing their economy and creating a greater sense of choice for consumers will help them to stay in power, they will do everything in their ability to make sure that that comes to fruition. And as I said, they have lots and lots of money to spend on that. Looking longer term, China is just one big population center, but there are a number of others. We have India, which is likely to have a bigger population than China in the next 20 years. And of course, the Middle East has burgeoning populations, which are especially in need of education and infrastructure and sewage and all of the things that we take for granted. We also have, of course, large populations right across the Asian region, and the Asian region is the center for GDP growth. There's a reason that the IMF class a global recession as less than 3% growth, because the Asian region is unlikely to come anywhere close to 3%. A hard landing for China would be considered a slow to 5% growth, which, if that were in a developed economy, the politicians wouldn't stop patting each other on the back. Over the longer term, we can expect more investment into the Asian region. We've talked in the last year about the wobbly West and the enterprising East, because the East have learned the lessons that we wish we should have learned throughout this cycle. They went through the trauma of the Asian financial crisis 10 years ago. They came through it. It resulted in deflationary pressures there and high unemployment, and they had to implement some very tough measures, but the Asian region came through. Their financial sector is in ruddy health excuse me, ruddy health compared with the financial institutions that we have in the West, and they're likely to be winners in any new recovery situation. It means that while we continue to hear about people pulling their money out of emerging markets because of the currency risk, the chances are that over the long term, Asian currencies have a firm foundation because they have such large current account surpluses. And over the very long term, there is a transfer of wealth from the West to the East. The great symbiosis that we have lived with over the last decade, where the Asians more or less lent the money to the West so that the West could buy Asian goods, has been interrupted to a certain extent because of this recession, where Western consumers have slowed down in their consumption. But considering the fact that there is such competition in the manufacturing sector, there is little choice but to import from Asia. And we can expect that to continue over the long term, and particularly as Asia moves up the value stream. There is also the fact that it is going to take years for the financial institutions of the West to be strong enough to stand on their own two feet without the support of their respective governments. But that is unlikely to be the case for Asia. And they have probably been burned to an extent that they're going to be more likely to invest in their own region. So that is another one of the reasons that we are very keen on the Asian region for the very long term. What we have also seen is over the last few months, in particular, commodities had hit a peak of medium-term significance. We saw oil hitting $150, and a number of other commodities topped out following incredible runs on the upside in March. I would list the grains particularly in that group. Considering the extent to which they'd run on the upside and the inflationary pressures that had come along with those massive runs on the upside, it's unlikely that we're going to see commodities and commodity inflation being a problem any time in the next year, and potentially even longer than that. It's going to take a significant amount of support building before investors will be willing to rush back into commodities following this incredible volatility. But the fact remains that all of the fundamental bullish arguments for being in the commodity sector remain intact. The fact is, though, that it is a small market relative to the rest of the capital markets, and it will always be volatile because these are smaller markets, and a number of them are dependent on weather, which, despite our best efforts, is unpredictable. So yes, commodities are going through a medium-term correction right now. They're well off their highs, and it is going to take time for them to generate the interest that would be needed to generate the kind of spectacular uptrends we saw earlier this year. If we look back to 2002, 2003, the evidence was there that we were about to start into a secular bull market for commodities. We'd already started at that point, but we were at significantly low prices. And it took a number of years before interest in the commodity cycle was sparked enough that by 2007 we were getting big flows into the sector generally. And it could take another few years before that kind of interest is stimulated once more. That means that inflation in the short term, in the short to medium term, in other words, through the end of this year and next year, is unlikely to be any kind of significant problem. However, it does not mean that the policies that are being pursued by central banks today are not inflationary, because without the shadow of a doubt, they are inflationary. You simply cannot pump the amount of money into the markets that is currently being pumped and make loans that are basically unrepayable without there being some commensurate result. And that result is most certainly going to be inflationary, in my opinion. But not this year, not next year. What we're seeing at the moment is the seeds are being sown for the next inflationary cycle. We're already starting to see that investors are very reticent about the way the central bankers are dealing with the current situation. But of course, the fact of the matter is that they don't have any choice. The banks have to be recapitalized because we simply can't afford to kiss goodbye to our financial sector. And it is considered an acceptable risk to stoke inflation because there is the perception among central bankers that they can deal with inflation. They'll just raise interest rates and tighten it off when it starts to become a problem, as they did earlier this year. So that leaves us in an interesting position, because at the moment, inflation is not a problem. Markets are extremely low. Valuations have improved considerably. And as an adjunct, I would say that yes, we could see PE ratios rising as earnings estimates are pegged back into next year, but they're unlikely to rise back to the levels that we saw prior to this crisis. So there is certainly value being brought back into these markets, and commodities are back at levels that we haven't seen in years. And we are back, in a sense, back to the future, because today there are so many of the opportunities available to us that were also available to us in 2003. I will grant anyone that the economic situation is far worse today than it was 5 years ago, and it will take longer to sort this out. But for the longer term investor, and I mean by that someone who is willing to sit with something for a number of years rather than months, then value is certainly to be found in this market and not just in equities. We have seen the spreads on corporate debt widening out to levels we haven't seen in years. This has been primarily a credit crisis, and the compression of yield as more and more risk was acceptable, which led managers to push the boat out further and accept greater amounts of risk for an acceptable yield. Well, that trend has ended, and the result has been a revaluation of what risk is in the market, and what we're at right now is an overreaction in that type of evaluation. Yields on GE, for example, are 5% over Treasuries, 500 basis points. That's remarkable. And if one is to accept the fact that GE is unlikely to go bust, then we are being presented with value there as well. And of course, high yield is trading at something like 20% over treasuries. Or, excuse me, that's not true. 20% yields. So that is also a remarkably high yield. You don't even get that in some of those Canadian income trusts. So that is also a massive overreaction. But what we also see now is that we are coming to the end of the secular bull market in bonds, in government bonds. Bond prices have been moving upwards, have been on an upward trajectory for more than 20 years. The 10-year yield appears to have bottomed back in 2003 and is in a long-term base formation right now. The credit crisis has certainly interjected the potential for yields to rise significantly over the short to medium term. But there's no shortage of bonds in the markets, and governments are printing them and trying to lend with gusto. Yields are quite low, and investors, if they were to take a step back and not think so much about the safe haven of government bonds, but to look at the return, it's not appetizing. And there will certainly be better returns to be found in other instruments going forward. So that is certainly something that will animate investors, probably not right away, but it will certainly be something that they will be starting to think about as we see the worst of this credit crisis past us. Deflation is the byword at the moment, but with the measures that have already been taken and the surety that even more extreme measures will be taken if this situation deteriorates further, deflation is something that we need to worry about in the immediate future. But over the medium to longer term, inflation is the much, much bigger theme because of the amount of money that is being printed. Now, gold has been a remarkable outperformer relative to stock markets, or relative performer ju to just about anything else except the yen, the dollar, and some of these treasuries over the last 6 months or so. And it could come under pressure in the short term as people begin to move away from safe havens. But because of the remarkable inflationary pressures that are nascent in the system at present, the secular bull market for gold remains intact. Although, considering the fact that it hit $1,000 and is now in a consolidation, it could take time before it can generate enough of support to fuel the next impressive uptrend. And by impressive, I mean that it will move above $1,000 and significantly above $1,000, not just move back and test to that level or move back and make a short-term high beyond that. I think it will take time before gold can move very much beyond the $1,000 level, and certainly at the moment, the risks are to the downside. Looking at some of the other precious metals, they have fallen remarkably over the last 6 months, and we're seeing, particularly when you look at platinum relative to gold, platinum had traded at more than 2 times gold up until the last few months, and it's almost back to parity right now. That's an incredible downward acceleration. And silver has always been high beta gold and has pulled back extremely significantly, as has palladium. In a scenario where we see gold beginning to outperform once more on the basis that it is a store of value for the long term, then we have to look at these other precious metals as being cheap. Having gold's relative performance right now being a safe haven, or I think as David says, that buying gold because it's a haven during a panic is his least favorite reason for buying gold. And that is certainly borne true by the commonality in the sector. When we begin to see some of these other precious metals beginning to outperform, that will be an indication that money is beginning to move back into the precious metal sector and potentially into the other commodities. I want to spare a word for oil, and I apologize for abusing you with this long email or this long audio, but we have been long-term bulls of energy and oil markets for as long as I've been working at Fuller Money, which is 5 years next week. And there is the best way to define the long-term bull market for oil is in terms of the rising cost of production. With oil today at $67, we are at a point where some of the alternative sources of oil production are being questioned because they're becoming too expensive to produce. Over the medium term, that will help to put a floor under markets. And it will probably take a massive depression to justify those type of production cuts beyond the very short term. And oil has fallen very significantly. So it's probably time to start looking for a short to medium term low in the oil markets. Considering the size of the fall, it's probably not a good idea to become increasingly bearish, given the fact that it's fallen from nearly $150 down to $67. That does not mean that we're going to see it rally straight back up to its highs, and there is going to be a significant period of consolidation. The fact that oil is unlikely to rally significantly back above $100 or even $150 anytime soon is very good for the prospects for inflation and stock markets over the medium to longer term. So, with that, I will leave you for the evening. You'll see the note on comment of the day that David is well, but he's away. That is because Mrs. Fuller is in hospital. She had a mild heart attack. She's fine for the moment, and she will be undergoing some surgery early next week, and David will be in subsequent to that. And with that, I will leave you for the evening, but thank you very much for your time.